Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get ready to get blitzed on the Blitz podcast at thehuddle.com with your hosts Steve Gallo and Harley Schultz.
Welcome back to another episode of the Blitz Podcast. We have made it through a week, and we're heading into week two. And, of course, I'm joined by Harley Schultz. Harley, how are you faring so far in this young, early football season?
Well, I can feel every one of my 49 years on this earth today after spending most of yesterday actively tweeting, actively watching games, actively making lineup changes, and actively answering start-sit questions for all the people on Twitter. Unfortunately, because of that, I'm going to have to give myself an injury designation for this coming week of did not practice today due to shoulder and arm injury.
Hey, I'm right there with you. You know, they say that, you know, it's not just a, what did it call us, couch quarterback? Yeah, blah, 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 blah. Couch quarterbacks. I don't even know what they call it, but in any event, I mean,
Monday morning quarterbacks.
Yeah. But for what it's worth, like, my back is killing me today. I don't know if it was from, you know, quick movements. Yeah. That's just, oh no, it wasn't. But hey, it's physical for us fans too. Right. But yeah, we don't matter how we wind up on the injury report. As long as our vocal cords are there, then we're good and we can move forward with that. So,
well, I mean, your couch quarterback, on Fridays, I do some work with a local high school football team, and it means sitting on a painfully uncomfortable stool for 4 hours during a game. So I'm sure that didn't help my lower back.
Armchair quarterback. That's what I was trying to think of. Armchair quarterback. And I don't have an armchair, so that's
– well, I think after this week, I might need to be a wheelchair quarterback.
There you go. We might have had a few of those this year anyway. I'm not sure this week anyway. But in any event, I know there's a lot to talk about, so I'm going to throw it over to Harley for this week's Blitz Podcast News.
Thank you, Steve. Tight end injuries were the major storyline of week one. If you spent an early round draft pick on a tight end, you probably found yourself scraping the trash heap looking for a fill-in. Unfortunately, most of the fill-ins did very little, which on the 2023 tight end scale still made them look very viable. J.K. Dobbins tore his Achilles, opening the door for a free agency bidding frenzy for Baltimore running backs. Now, before you go out and blow your budget on Gus Edwards or Justice Hill, remember that both Leonard Fournette and Kareem Hunt are sitting on the sidelines waiting for an opportunity. And perhaps more importantly, remember that whoever signs there, the Ravens running back one is actually Lamar Jackson. Just when you thought it was safe to assume that Bijan Robinson would be a generational talent at running back, Arthur Smith showed up and took a dump in your bowl of Cheerios. As a proud Kyle Pitts owner, I feel your pain. Our support group can be found on YouTube under the title of Arthur Smith is a Bleeping Moron Who Hates Your Fantasy Team. The Bengals made it clear that they do not have any desire to re-sign T. Higgins when his contract expires. Higgins then went out and caught zero of his 8 targets. To put that in terms that are easy for the Monday to Friday workday crew to understand, Higgins did his version of quiet quitting. And finally, come waiver day, you can call me Ash Ketchum, because Pukachu, I choose you. This has been your BPN News Update.
That was a pretty good one. And I'm glad you said that because I wasn't saying his last name. I'm not going to say his first name either. Man, so much to talk about this week, but let's set the table. We're definitely going to have our pay-ups, stay-aways, and value plays for DFS. That's one of our segments. We do that religiously. I think that we need to do just reactions to week one, overreactions, underreactions, reactions, just reactions to week one. And you talked about one of them already, Justice Hill. What does that mean for people that have, you know, waivers, whether it's blind bid or, you know, waiver priority? Where are you at with that? Is he the one that you're going after if he's available? Or is
I'm not going to die on that hill.
You're not going to die on it. You know what? That's not a bad idea.
Basically, coming into this year, everyone assumed Gus Edwards would be the handcuff back to J.K. Dobbins. And J.K. Dobbins, well, he appeared healthy at the end of last season, was coming off of a major injury before that. So yeah. Gus Edwards had the opportunity. He filled the opportunity well when he had the chance before he got hurt. Now, Edwards, again, was being nursed back into this game as well. So I think eventually he's going to be the number one guy. But again, as I said, there are legitimate running back one options available out there. Not guys who are past their prime, like Melvin Gordon, who they've activated from their practice squad. I'm not buying that at all. We've seen Melvin Gordon the last couple of years try to fit into a couple different offenses, and he just really, you could tell that he had worn out everything that he had when he was with the Chargers and maybe his first year with Denver Broncos. Now Fournette, I think, has got some wear on the tires still. Obviously Kareem Hunt is young enough, he's still got some wear on his tires. Both would be decent options. I actually would love to see him sign Hunt, I think, just because it'd be great for Hunt to get a couple of revenge games each year against the Cleveland Browns.
I guarantee you, we're both in Scott Fishbowl, Justice Hill, if available, goes for, if not $100, which is the full budget, pretty close to it. Guaranteed, multiple leagues that happens. If you're hurting at running back, I see throwing something out, but I don't know that I blow my budget on him, honestly. Kareem Hunt, I believe, he might be on my team, actually, in my league, but I'm pretty sure he got rostered as a late-round pick, hoping that he lands somewhere. Same thing with Fournette. So anybody else that you see that's going to be worth blowing a good chunk of money on in week one, or are we looking at them as Freshman Jackson-like players where they're going to all of a sudden...
That's the big thing. I mean, I jokingly mentioned Puka there in the final comment, and at least in the Scott Fishbowl, I think some of the leagues that drafted a little bit later with some of the training camp talk and whatnot, he probably got nabbed in a late round of drafts that started later, but obviously in some of the drafts that starts earlier, like ours, no one actually had drafted him. So he is sitting on the waivers. I think he's going to probably command a healthy penny. My biggest concern with him is that he is really playing the Cooper Kupp role in the offense last week. And what's going to eventually happen when Cooper Kupp is once again ready to play? Again, we don't know for certain when that's going to be, but it's going to be at least another 3 weeks before he can or is eligible to play because of the IR designation to start the season. Now, will he still have a role when Cooper Kupp comes back? We don't know. Ironically, Tutu Atwell, who I had a lot of shares of in DFS this past weekend, had a huge game. A lot of people were on Tyler Higbee. A lot of people were on Van Jefferson. But to get a little bit of alternate exposure to that game, I decided to take some shares of Tutu, and that actually ended up working out really well for me. But the other guy that I think you got kind of got to keep an eye on is Zach Moss should be back this week. Now, while everyone else is going out and spending $60-$70 or a large portion of their running back budget or their free agent budget going after flavor of the week for Baltimore, I'd take a shot on Zach Moss if he's still sitting out there because, I mean, Deion Jackson averaged just over 1 yard per carry on 13 attempts yesterday.
Say that again.
He had 14 rushing yards on 13 carries. Just over 1 yard per carry. Unfortunately, the rookie from Maple Grove, Minnesota, Evan Hull, hurt his knee. He looked very, very good in the preseason, but this sounds like it's going to be a multiple-week absence for him. That's going to leave their running back room at least until week five, needing someone. And I believe that the coach has already said that the job is going to be Zach Moss's when he is ready to go, which He was close to playing this week, so I see no reason why he won't play next week. I have no reason to think he's not going to start and be effective for at least the next 3 weeks until whatever happens with Jonathan Taylor. And if Jonathan Taylor ends up getting traded, then Zach Moss is your starting running back for Indianapolis for the rest of the season.
Yep. Do you really think he gets traded? I don't.
I don't know. How can you go back to a situation like that where the bridges were just so heavily burned?
Yeah, but who else is going to pay what he wants?
Well, it sounded like Miami before the season was right there that he wanted, but Indianapolis wanted an arm, two legs, and a pair of big toes for him, which was absurd.
Yes. So their stance was, we don't think he's worth paying. However, we want you to pay us what he's not worth.
Exactly.
Make it make sense.
That's just more about the Indianapolis Colts front office than anything else, I'd say.
Yeah, that's like when you go to trade a car in. How much will you give me for it? I'll give you $5,000 for it. And then the next day you go by, and it's on the lot for $15,000.
Well, let's weigh the two things together then. How obviously Baltimore is a team that considers themselves in their playoff window. And now all of a sudden they've got a huge gaping hole at the running back position. Jonathan Taylor would possibly be a good fit there. Well, again, whether or not they can make it work from a trade perspective, I don't know. But it's another thing to consider. I mean, yeah, you go out and spend 100% of your free agent budget on Justice Hill or Melvin Gordon or Gus Edwards or whomever, and then all of a sudden, 2 weeks from now, we find out that Jonathan Taylor is going to the Ravens. Yeah. You've got to feel pretty sick to your stomach.
See, here's how I see it, though. I just, like, the Ravens are a really well-run organization, right? There's a few clubs that you can look at and go, they're just really well-run. I just don't see anybody giving him the contract that he wants, and I don't know that you're going to trade for him without giving him that contract, right? So as bad as it may look being in Indy, I think that's where he's going to stay, but who knows? So that's the running back portion of it. What else you want to talk about some reactions on? How about those Bengals?
There were a couple of shocking offensive performances this past weekend.
Yeah.
A couple of positive ones and a couple of negative ones. Quite possibly the biggest negative one was the output of the New York Giants on Sunday Night Football against Dallas. In what has traditionally been a fairly high-scoring matchup, it was basically a blitzkrieg from down number one.
Yeah, Dallas has a formidable defense. They absolutely have one of the best defenses, if not the best defense in the league, and that's coming from a Philly fan, right? There's no denying that. I do think that they may have some holes in that secondary that will cost them at times, et cetera. But the Giants, last year, I think a lot of people would say, they weren't the strongest playoff team, right? A lot of it was it smoke and mirrors? Was it just everything hitting on all cylinders at the right time? But, man, nothing hit on any cylinders this time. So at one point, during close to the end of the game, Tom Gower, who used to be a Football Outsiders, tweeted that with Sunday Night Football not quite over, by next-gen stats, X completion percentage plus minus has Daniel Jones as the worst this week at minus 19.2%. That's bad. But it was so bad, you don't need next-gen stats to tell you that, right? Mm-hmm. I'll tell you what you need next-gen stats to tell you, though. What about the Dallas performance? They put 40 points up. I bet people are looking at that thinking, yeah, thumbs up, it's all good, right? And mm-hmm. And they did put 40 points on the board, yeah. Two touchdowns were from the defensive or special team side. But at that same point, that late in the game, you want to know what he tweeted about, that tweet included about Dak Prescott? At that time.
Well, from my own personal experience, Dak's final line did not look very impressive for a team that scored 40 points.
No, it did not. And at that point, close to the end of that game, and I don't know if it held up, but Dak was the second worst in that same stat at minus 15.4%. Now, granted, there was weather that played a factor into it, but I don't think there's anybody that would have come out of that game or that would look at a box score, look at a just overall score and think that Dak played that poorly.
Well, I know you are, I should say your wife, are a bit of Browns fans. Yes. Heard a lot of chatter this weekend during that game that Deshaun Watson was looking to be really struggling. Was that more of a weather thing, or was that more something for Browns fans and also Deshaun owners to be concerned about.
The weather there was pretty bad. The Browns found a way to overcome it, though. The Bengals did not. So let's talk about that. What about Joey B and Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins?
I was kind of hoping you might segue from that because, I had Joey Burrow as my stay-away quarterback last week, and with no surprise. I mean, he's coming off a missed preseason due to the injury suffered early in the preseason, and he didn't have time to prep anything. Obviously, as I mentioned in the news, T. Higgins clearly upset about not having his even like a consensus that they would agree on a contract terms or whatever. Basically, he's been told they're not re-signing him. And now he has to play out the season with that on his plate. Like, what's his initiative? I mean, other than trying to like establish a resume for the rest of the league to bid on him with, but that offense looks a little scared right now. And I think that, and just like we had the problem with the offensive line struggles for New York, with Dallas pressuring them constantly, the Browns actually got some good pressure on Burrow throughout that game too.
Yeah, I think the Browns have a defense that's going to surprise a few people this year also, honestly.
Yeah, it's I think that most people don't like they hear the Cleveland Browns, they hear the Houston Texans, and they think, oh, these are just bad teams, so they're going to have bad defenses. Both those teams actually have pretty good defenses, particularly against the pass.
Yeah. So let's see. What about, are we going to overreact or talk about maybe the Kansas City wide receivers? What about that?
Oh, my God. We had a few people on Twitter that were a little bit up in arms about the performance of the Kansas City wide receivers in the opening game on Thursday night.
And, let me ask you a quick question. Is Kansas City tied for second in that division, or are they tied for last?
I think they have to be considered tied for last because no team has a tie yet.
Okay. Yeah.
And all the teams have played, so there's no team with like the 0-0 record right now. So
right. Okay.
I can only say it from this standpoint. I get the hate everyone was having, but I looked back. There were three primary plays that Kadarius Toney is getting heat for. The first one being the interception that was returned for a touchdown. If you take a look at the screenshots everyone posted online of that, it looks like the ball is right in his hands,
yeah,
and he just missed grabbing it, and it bounces off his hands and goes to the defensive back. But if you're watching it in full speed, you can see that the ball was actually thrown a little bit behind him, and so it wasn't a clear and obvious catch that was going to happen. He did go up for it. He did get both hands on it. He should have caught it. And if you ask him, he would say he should have caught it. But it wasn't the easiest catch in the world to make, considering where it was. The second one was the one where they needed to convert a first down, and he ran a crossing play, and the ball basically ended up going right to him and hitting him. But he was screened by fellow former New York Giant Richie James, who ran a crossing pattern directly in front of him on that play at the moment it was thrown. So again, can we really blame Toney for that one? And of course, the third big blow to Toney was the only one that you 100% can blame him for, and that is for the last drive where the ball was thrown and it hit him square in the numbers and he just didn't catch it. Yeah. That one was on him. But again, enough with defending Kadarius Toney. I think he's going to be fine. I actually 100% believe that the very first play on offense for Kansas City next week will be Andy Reid and Pat Mahomes throwing the ball to Toney, just to basically say, "Hey, look, we trust you."
Kind of what they did. I'm more concerned with Kareem. Yeah, I was gonna say kind of like what they did with Kareem Hunt a few years ago when he fumbled right in that Patriots game in his first game, and then they just went right back to him, gave him the ball. That's definitely something Andy will do. And yeah, I agree with you. I think that Toney bounces back. I think he has a solid year. I don't know that he's going to wind up being a top 10 wide receiver, but he's going to be that wide receiver 3 with some upside weeks for people like we expect. Sky Moore, look, you got him at sleeper prices basically, right? So your cost is don't overreact, and you can wait with him. I would think. But yeah, I've got some concern there with Sky Moore, and I'm somebody that owns Sky Moore shares.
Well, of course, most people know we do record this on Monday nights. Well, Monday Night Football is on here in the background for us. And right now we're early in the first quarter of the Jets and Buffalo game, and Aaron Rodgers has left the game with an apparent injury, and Zach Wilson is in at quarterback for the Jets. So we'll wait till we get a little more update on that. But yeah, back to the Sky Moore situation. We knew he was a bit undersized, and pretty much every pass that he failed to get was overthrown. Now, here's my reasoning for not being overly concerned about this. The Chiefs had a game plan going into this week that involved Travis Kelce as the receiving focal point of the offense.
Yep.
He sustained an injury late on Tuesday. The game was Thursday evening. That meant that there was basically one practice, 2 days, to completely rewrite the game script. Travis Kelce was not the featured part of the offense, and still expect guys who, for the most part, are underexperienced. I mean, yes, Tony is in his second or third season, but he spent most of his career so far on the IL. Justin Ross missed all of last season with recovery from his collegiate injuries. Rashid Ross, this was his first game in the pros. And Sky Moore, he played last year, but he basically played as a wide receiver 5, wide receiver 6 for them for most of the season last year. So it was very much a getting to know you, getting to know all about you offense for Patrick Mahomes. And he only had, like I said, 1 day's practice, maybe 1.5 days practices to figure out, okay, what is he going to do? And now he's had 10 days since then to work with those guys. So yeah. Yeah, if it's a bad showing next week, then we'll start to worry. But here in Chiefs Kingdom, we're not concerned.
Okay. What about Philly? What about Jalen Hurts and the offensive crew there?
Oh, my God. That was underwhelming. But in their defense, they were facing the New England Patriots, who, I mean, we always talk about New England having a good defense. And if you look at their team, they always had like one or two superstars on their defense. This year, it's kind of a whole bunch of, who in the hell is this guy? You look at their list, and a bunch of guys that I just really don't know enough about, even from an IDP standpoint, guys that were completely off the radar. And they looked very, very good last week, or a couple days ago, I should say now. So, yes, the Patriot defense is for real right now.
Yeah.
Again, it looks like a hodgepodge of guys that you wouldn't have drafted even in IDP, but they're actually very good defense. They play as a team. And so I'm a little concerned about that whole offense there, but not that much. I'd be more concerned if like they had a major injury. Now that gets me to my Minnesota Vikings, who
hold on a second.
They do have a couple injuries.
Hold on a second. Before you transition to Minnesota, the one thing I'll say about the Philly game, they did look pretty good on the first drive, and then it kind of started to sputter after that, right? But there was weather, and we know that Bill's one of the best tacticians in the game. How many months has he had to prepare for this game? It's not like he had a normal week, mm-hmm. right? Or 10 days coming off a bye or something. Like,
well, I'm saying, and Belichick is used to playing late into the season, so
yeah, I mean, he's had months to prepare for this game, so no, I'm not going to overreact to it. But go ahead, talk to me about the Vikings.
Well, the Vikings sustained a couple of potentially painful injuries to their offensive line this past weekend. Now, obviously, if you look at the statistical lines for Kirk Cousins and Justin Jefferson and TJ Hockenson, even rookie Jordan Addison, you'd think that they had a great game, and by all accounts, they did. But they weren't really able to establish a running game, and you really can't against Tampa Bay's huge interior. Vita Vea was an absolute destructive force in that game from the defensive side. He even took out his own linebacker, Levante David, for a short period due to a little friendly fire, as they said in the game. But, injuries to the starting center, Garrett Bradbury, and to their borderline all-pro right tackle Christian Darrisaw are going to be huge, huge blows to a team that was already had zero depth at the line position. So that does not bode well for their chances traveling to Philly, which is pretty much a hostile environment for Vikings already.
That is true. And it's a short week on top of it all, right?
Yes.
Okay. Anybody else? Anything else? Any other player? Any other team? Anything you want to talk about reaction-wise?
Well, I would like to comment on, and you can speak to it a little bit more from a defensive standpoint, I think, but the Chargers' defense against the Miami Dolphins' offense in that game there, I really thought that with everyone finally healthy, that we had seen an improvement in the Chargers' defense over what we saw last year. But, yeah, what happened there?
Yeah, look, well, I'm going to answer that the way I'm going to answer my reactions to overall to week one. It's 1 week. Generally, defenses are ahead of offenses, generally.
Exactly.
But sometimes there are matchups that are nightmares, and that game was in Miami, correct? Let me check. See, I don't know. I don't remember. This is
now you've got me. I don't think it was.
Let's see. Where was the game? Oh, it was in LA. But it still was. I don't know what the temperature was there, but I'm sure that heat and humidity probably played a little bit of a, thing on it. And you're like, well, the other team had to play with that too. But chasing around Cheetah and Waddle can't be fun.
And are you concerned at all with the fact that it was such a huge disparagement in statistical numbers between Hill and Waddle after one game?
No, not at all. And I'll tell you, I think that what people would be shocked at, if they went and looked at the box score, didn't see the game, they saw the scoreboard, right? And then they looked at Miami stats first and they saw what Tua did. They're probably thinking that Justin Herbert was over 350 and stuff like that too, right? That wasn't the case. That wasn't the case. I'm not going to overreact really to anything in week one. Maybe to a fault I'm like that, but no one's ever as bad as they seem, and no one's ever as good as they seem, quite honestly. It's somewhere in between that they wind up. So, Justin Herbert.
I will like to say this, that I was pleasantly impressed with the production on offense of the Houston offense with C.J. Stroud. After looking really overmatched all preseason, I think he looked very, very good in that game. Against a very game Baltimore defense. It wasn't like he was facing a bad defense. He was facing a very, very good defense, and I feel like he played very, very well in that game.
He did. Secondary is probably Baltimore's biggest issue right now, too, so that probably played into it a little bit. But it was on the road, right? That's a big thing for a rookie. But I also think just the way the NFL offenses have evolved over time, that they're a little more friendly for college quarterbacks making that transition now.
We still don't have an exact word on Rodgers' injury, but he was carted to the loading dock area where he got off the cart and walked with a couple coaches and training staff into the tunnel. So it looks like his first half is at least maybe done, but we'll see if he comes back out for the second half of this game. Either way, if you started Rodgers in a DFS format or in a season-long thing, I don't like your prognosis for tonight.
No, I would agree. Even if he was playing, I may not like it because it looks like it's going to be a pretty low-scoring affair. Anyway, with that, that's our reactions to week one, right? Let's get right into DFS. That's a pretty good segue. Let's get into our pay-ups, our value plays, and our stay-aways. But before we do that, for those that don't know, Harley will set an over-under. He and I do not discuss this in advance, so I don't know what he likes or dislikes, and he doesn't know what I like or dislike, other than knowing each other from how we do things in the past. So go ahead, set the over-under for tonight, Harley.
This is a very, very tough week. I'm going to go with 4.
Four. You do make that tough. Let's see. Okay. I'm going to take the over. I'm going to tell you I think it's going to push, but I'll take the over.
I was close to setting a 3, to tell you the truth. I really think that we're not going to match on a bunch of stuff. And I would like to add that the NFL schedule makers have actually thrown a bit of a ripple into DFS this year, because starting with week number 2, there are actually 2 games on Monday Night Football for the next couple of weeks. So there'll be 2 less teams on the main slate, and we haven't even reached the byes yet.
I hate double Monday night games, quite honestly. So who you
I suppose their thinking is that if one game is an absolute stinker, that people will tune into the other game.
Yeah. Well, if it's the only game, people are going to tune into it no matter what. You think people turned off that Dallas Giants game last night? That was like a car crash where you can't look away. So
I think we're all watching it, waiting to see when they would finally take Daniel Jones out of the game.
Oh, that honestly.
And they didn't until like the last drive.
Honestly, that was coaching malpractice. Like they came out of it. So process over results, right? Process to leave him in was absolutely abysmal at that point. There's nothing to be gained, 100% risk, because where are they if he goes out, no matter how bad he played last night, right? That was something that I can't believe that Dable did. I can't believe he left him in as long as he did.
Yeah, that was, I mean, again, coaches will kind of like it. When you see that, though, you got to like brain hold out a little bit. Because you learn, you live, you learn by watching what some coaches do in absurdist situations. Like you'll start to realize there's going to be coaches like Arthur Smith.
Yeah.
That just their decisions don't always make sense. And you kind of got to factor that into your decisions, both from a year long and from a weekly standpoint, too.
Yep. All right. So let's talk pay ups at quarterback. Who are you going to pay up this week for at quarterback? And I'm guessing it's not Aaron Rodgers, but that's okay.
Well, after that injury, I don't think that Aaron Rodgers is going to be on my radar at all this week coming up. But I'm going to pay up for Patrick Mahomes at Jacksonville. You know, he's coming off the embarrassing opening week loss. We talked about this a lot already. He had 2 days to game plan, basically, for Travis Kelce being out. He's got a week and a half now to get on the page with the receivers. And there's a decent chance they get Kelce back for this game. Either way, I firmly expect Mahomes to shut down all the naysayers early and repeatedly this week. This is going to be a shootout between two of the best young quarterbacks in the league right now, with Mahomes and with Lawrence for Jacksonville. This is one of those games that could hit 65 or 70 total points.
So we're definitely seeing that game differently. I'm not paying up for Patrick Mahomes. I'll give you my stay away. It's Patrick Mahomes. It's on the road. We don't know if we'll have Kelce back. He's the highest priced quarterback on the board. I don't know that you can work out all those issues, and he could, but I still don't know that it's worth putting him in your lineup at the cost that he is. So I'm staying away from him for a week. I'll let other people try and chase, thinking that he's just going to be Patrick Mahomes with a light switch. I'm paying up for a guy that I haven't seen play yet. He's on the screen behind me right now. As you said, we're recording on Monday night. And it's not Aaron Rodgers, but it's Josh Allen. He's at home. He'll be against the Raiders. Raiders currently sitting in first place in the AFC West. That will come crashing down. And I'm expecting a big day from Josh Allen, which will be probably a bounce back from this week. So I think that the Jets have a tough defense, and Allen's probably going to be held somewhat in check this week. So I think he'll also have lower ownership for next week, too.
Hey, I have no problem with that. I actually looked at Allen as a possibility. I was all on board with Denver having a improved offense with Peyton at the helm this year. And obviously they were without Jerry Jeudy, but their offense looked to be struggling consistently to move the ball against that Vegas defense, which I feel like we all thought was just going to be a joke this year. But I'm a little concerned that maybe there's a little bit legitimacy to it.
Yeah, I mean, there's never a joke in the NFL except for, you know, I don't know, Arizona Cardinals maybe.
Yeah. Well, okay, so you named your stay away as well, which is Mahomes. I'm going to stay away from the guy I stayed away from last week, and that's Joe Burrow, even at home against Baltimore. It's two straight tough matchups for him. It really doesn't help his cause at all that Higgins, like I said, is basically just running through the motions right now. I mean, he's running routes, and until the coaching staff basically just says, look, we're putting you on the bench until you like look like you're actually going to try. if you want like further proof, last season Burrow actually struggled against Baltimore. He threw for 217 yards and one touchdown in one game, 215 yards and one touchdown in another game. Now, those are good numbers if you're Desmond Ridder or one of the rookie quarterbacks. That's right. Not a good number for Joe Burrow. And again, you said Baltimore's secondary may be a bit of their weakest thing. I still think they're pretty darn good.
They are pretty darn good. I think that Joe bounces back being at home, but he's not somebody that I I definitely would say I want to get into lineups, though. But I think he's a guy that this week will perform well enough to make people feel better about him going forward, like they did going into the season. So who's your value play?
My value play is Jared Goff versus Seattle. Seattle just allowed over-the-hill former Lion Matthew Stafford to go off against them with basically my JV high school wide receiver room. Now they're going to face the current Lion with Amon-Ra St. Brown and, well, realistically, equally untalented but at least somewhat veteran depth wide receiver room behind him. The field sucks for value this week, though. I mean, there's really very little that I want to dive into at value. His seems like the most obvious play if you're going to try to save money at quarterback.
And he's at home, and we actually have our first match of the day.
Yeah, so I'm looking down at the guys in the 6,000 and below range. Daniel Jones at Arizona. Again, you got to assume he's going to be better than last week, but, right. I mean – It's hard to consider playing him after last week.
And he's not cheap. He's Geno not cheap Smith. On FanDuel. He's not cheap on FanDuel.
Geno Smith traveling east to Detroit. I don't love that. Detroit's defense is much improved this year. Russell Wilson looked bad, and now he's facing Washington, where he's going to be chased a lot. Purdy's facing the Rams. I guess I don't mind that one. Sam Howell at Denver. Nope. Still don't trust Jordan Love. I know he had a good game against the Bears, but that was the Bears and this is Atlanta. Different defenses altogether.
And on the road.
Maybe Stafford. If I have to go for a value play, maybe CJ Stroud at home versus Indy.
Yeah. You don't feel I wouldn't feel good with that. So no, I'm with you. I thought Jared Goff was an easy value play by process of elimination, honestly.
Yeah.
All right, let's run on over.
Okay, let's roll over to running back.
Yeah, tell me, who are you paying up for at running back?
Well, I'm going to pay up for a guy whose recency bias is going to reduce his ownership this week, mainly because I think everybody will be frustrated by the fact that two touchdowns that should have gone to him were sniped by Tyler Algier. And, of course, the guy I'm picking is Bijan Robinson versus Green Bay. I think the more important thing to take from last week's game is that Bijan was the dominant target hog for Atlanta in the passing game. Now he's facing a Green Bay defense that allowed 16 targets, 11 receptions, and 80 receiving yards to the Chicago Bears backfield last week. That's Bijan's role in this offense. Whether or not he gets the goal line touches remains to be seen. But Bijan's going to have a huge game through the air.
Yeah, the problem I have is I don't know if I trust Atlanta enough to make him a pay up, but you are saving some money by paying up on him versus some other guys. For me, I'm paying up for the top guy, the guy that's out there. Look, Christian McCaffrey, I think he's used to help protect Brock Purdy somewhat, honestly. It's at LA, which means it's basically a home game for San Francisco, right?
Yep.
And he did majority of his damage on the ground last week. There's plenty of ground to make up in the air with him. So I think that I'll pay up for Christian McCaffrey week two while he's healthy.
I think that he's going to have a decent pass game too. But again, I'm a little concerned. I mean, I feel like the Rams run defense, while it's not anywhere near as vaunted as it used to be, is still pretty solid.
Yeah. I can't argue that point. I think the Rams played over their head a little bit in week one, and we could see a letdown week two. And I think McCaffrey and the Niners in general are looking to try and, you know, make a statement early because they're going to need to.
Yep. So when I made my stay away, we always talk about not wanting to let injuries dictate our stay away players.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I had already made my stay away decision before I learned about the severity of an injury. I had Austin Eckler at Tennessee. Now, Tennessee allowed all of 7 running back scores all of last season, both on the ground and through the air, a total of 7 touchdowns. They continued that domination this past week as they completely stifled Jamal Williams. Now we find that Eckler tweaked his hamstring near the end of last week's game. I mean, in season long, you're not benching Eckler if he plays, but I just can't pay that much for him. I'd rather pay the extra $200 for McCaffrey or pay a little bit less for Bijan or Saquon. than trust Eckler in this game. Again, I think he's going to probably play, but a hamstring is one of those things that could flare up at any point. And we're not talking about a guy who has a career of playing through soft tissue injuries with hard impact.
Yeah,
this isn't George Kittle. We're talking about Austin Eckler, who's he's started several games in his career and then not finished them.
Right. So, yeah, he's not my stay away, mainly because the injury in news. As I watch a home run go into the stands against the Phillies, and now the score is 7-5. Okay, I got
to
try.
If I had to segue away from that, I would have probably chosen to stay away from Tony Pollard against this Jets run defense.
Well, then that would have given us a match, because I am staying away from Tony Pollard, even though he's at home. I think the Jets are going to have a super defense. And I was not impressed with the Cowboys offense this week, even though they put a 40 spot up on the Giants. I'm not. So I think Pollard will have ownership that he shouldn't have. I think he's a stay away, a clear stay away this week.
Not to segue away from our DFS, but something that always comes up in discussion in like home leagues or whatnot, any leagues that use defensive team scoring. What's your take on defensive team scoring negative points for your team when your team's defense gives up so many points, if those points weren't actually given up by the defense, but they're giving up by the offense? In the case of most of the points scored against New York, weren't allowed by New York's defense, they were allowed by the offense.
So I believe MFL has a setting where that can keep that from happening. And it's all about the way your league sets it. But no, points should not count against a team, a defense, if they were scored by the offense giving up pick sixes. Now, there are some people that will argue that an extra point shouldn't count because that's special teams too, right? But no, we won't get into that. But no, I don't think they should. I don't think that those two touchdowns should have counted against the Giants defense and it affected them negatively. But again, that's where
from my own soapbox, I say if your league still uses team defense,
there you go.
Get rid of it and add like three IDP players. Get like a defensive line person, a defensive back person, and a linebacker position for your teams.
Okay, I won't get on my soapbox about that.
I've fallen in love with that in the last few years. So
there you go. Well, that's good. IDP, the more IDP, the better. Love. Who are you going to have at your value play at running back?
I talked about him a little bit earlier in our talk about guys to consider on the waiver wire this week, and that's Zach Moss at Houston. As I said, Evan Hull hurt his knee. He's going to miss multiple weeks. Deion Jackson fumbled the ball twice and had 14 yards on 13 carries. Now, Moss was really close to suiting up this past week, and considering how badly Jackson looked and how, like I said, Hull won't get a chance to, I think that Moss will play, and Moss will do very well against the Houston run defense, which is definitely still their weakness.
Well, I cheated. I had two shots for us to match, and neither one of them matched. I'm a little worried. I want to make sure Moss is going to play before I'm going to say, okay, I'm going to go with him. But you do have that ability to wait till Sunday before you put your lineup in. I went with somebody we talked about during, you know, the early part of the show also, and we talked about the Baltimore running situation, right? So I'm telling you that my value play is Justice Hill and Gus Edwards. Justice Hill is $4,900 on DraftKings. Gus Edwards is $5,300. Guess what? Justin Hill gets the pull on DraftKings at $4,900. On FanDuel, Justice Hill is $6,100 and Gus is $5,900. So I'm going to do Gus there for $5,900. And now I've split and hedged my exposure. And maybe we'll get lucky.
That's not a bad strategy.
And maybe we get lucky and each one of them scores a touchdown.
Or maybe you get really unlucky and Melvin Gordon trods his way to 3 yards a carry on 20 carries.
Yeah, that too.
No scores.
Or Lamar Jackson has three rushing touchdowns from outside the 10-yard line.
You know that's going to happen.
Yeah, now that we said it, it is. All right, we've got one match through this halfway point. I think that the over is not going to hit. Who are you going to pay up for at the wide receiver spot? And I know it's not T. Higgins.
No, it's not T. Higgins. It's not Ja'Marr Chase. Again, I'm staying away from that offense entirely until we see them playing like they know what they're doing, and Joe Burrow playing like he doesn't have a 40-pound wallet weighing his ass down. Are we allowed to say that in this era? I'm sorry.
I don't know. We'll find out.
Okay, you have to beat that last one out there, but let's see. I'm going to pay up for the third highest priced guy on DraftKings, and that's Amon-Ra St. Brown versus Seattle. We just saw Puka Nacua and Tutu Atwell and the rest of the Teletubbies make Seattle's secondary look absolutely foolish last week. What do you think the Sun God's going to do against these guys?
You know, we have another match, and I guarantee that he just doesn't get the respect that he deserves, honestly. I did consider Ja'Marr Chase, honestly, because I think everybody's going to be off him. I do think that they're going to have a bounce back week. But St. Brown is absolutely a no-brainer pay up at this point, honestly.
I mean, he's going to be the guy running the cross patterns and stuff. He's going to be doing for Detroit what Puka did for the Rams against them last weekend. As much as I'm excited for Puka Nacua, Amon-Ra St. Brown is not Puka Nacua. Amon-Ra St. Brown is a heck of a lot better than Puka Nacua.
Yes, you like saying that name. I'm not saying.
Okay, Puka and Tutu. What a pair.
Oh, I wish I'd have had that game just to listen to the announcers, actually. All right, who are you staying away from? I think we're going to have a match here. I don't see how we can't have a match here, honestly.
I'm going to stay away from CeeDee Lamb versus the Jets. And here's why. I love Lamb when it is covered in a mint sauce.
Yeah.
I hate Lamb when it's covered in a gardener sauce.
Yes, that is it. That is the exact reason. And is that saying that he can't still wind up with a good fantasy day? Sure he could. There's no way I'm betting and saying I expect it to happen. Nope. Sauce is the real deal, and not playing CD against him, especially when Dak didn't really look good. He just didn't. I actually considered Dak as my stay away player, and you know what he was priced at. It wasn't even worth looking at. So yeah, that's an easy stay away. So we now are at three matches. Uh-oh, the over is now back in play. Who is your value player? There's no way we're matching here, by the way.
I'm going to go way down the list for my value play this week. And when I was talking about my value play quarterback, I mentioned one quarterback that I might consider taking a risk on. That quarterback being C.J. Stroud at home versus Indianapolis. So I'm going to go ahead and take my value play wide receiver as Stroud's favorite target from this past week, and that's Nico Collins. Indianapolis was bottom 10 in receptions and yardage allowed to opposing wide receivers last week. Now this week they face a fairly weak wide receiver room. I mean, both Nico and Robert Woods were targeted 11 times. Nico ended up with much more yardage than Woods did. At this price, if Nico ends up with another 6 and 80, you're set.
Yeah. So we don't have a match. I did look, actually, not at Nico, but I did look at Robert Woods because he was cheaper. But I settled on a guy that actually is not on the stat sheet this week. He did not record a reception, but he's playing at home, and he's far too good to be shut out 2 weeks in a row, and he's priced like he was shut out, kind of, maybe not as much as he should be. But I have to believe that Drake London is going to have the ability to at least get three times value from where he's at what is it? It's 5,000 and 5,800. I do. I think that the way you said you think that Andy opens up with a play for Kadarius to start the game, I think that they open up and they definitely find a way to get Drake London the ball to start the game.
My biggest concern there is I think that Green Bay's secondary is actually fairly good, and they don't have a lot of weapons staff to cover and guard there for Atlanta.
Well, I mean, you've got Kyle Pitts. You've got Bijan out of the backfield, Algiers, et cetera. So I don't know. We'll see. But it's a cheap play. So, and there are some options if you don't like that. You've got you've got Robert Woods.
Well, when you start talking about a guy who disappeared off the stat sheet this week and you're in that same range, another guy to look at is Christian Kirk.
Yes, I actually I like.
I already said that. I think the case. I said the KC Jacksonville game is going to be a shootout. Kirk, I mean, he was surprisingly not on the field as much as he should have been in this game.
Yep. I don't mind him on DraftKings. I don't like his FanDuel value though, at all.
I would agree there. Okay, so let's roll over to tight end. This is our chance to hit the over here is with the tight ends, I think.
Can I match the tight end whisperer? That is the question.
When we talk about pay to play, what we actually are saying is, are we paying these guys to actually play? Because the four highest priced guys on the board were like questionable up until the moment the game started, whether or not they were going to play. And so I'm going to pay up for one of the guys that did actually play, and that's Darren Waller.
Ding, ding.
He gets the pleasure of traveling to Arizona with injury questions swirling around each of the top four price guys. You got to pay up for the one with the easiest matchup, and that's Waller versus Arizona. I think that this was going to be an obvious match from day one.
Absolutely. I know how much you love tight ends against Arizona, and I pretty much did the same reasoning by deduction as you did. Don't want to mention Kelsey because we don't know what's up. Same with Andrews. Kittle still concerning me. So I thought Waller was an easy pick, quite honestly. What about value play? What are you looking for at your value play?
We're going to skip the stay away, huh?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, let's go to the stay away. My bad.
My stay away was going to be all three of the other top tight ends.
Oh, that's not fair. That's not fair. That's not fair.
No. I actually put Travis Kelce as my guy. Even if Kelce plays, the price tag is a bit too high for a guy who could suffer a re-injury at any point in the game. I think he is going to play. I think he's probably going to score. I think he's going to have a decent game. But again, you need Travis Kelce to have a Travis Kelce game to return value here. And even if he was fully healthy, I don't foresee that happening.
Right.
Now, if you want to take the injury quotient factor out of it and go down the list a little bit here, I'd probably stay away from Cole Kmet, who is the seventh highest priced guy. Tampa Bay actually gave up a lot of yards to TJ Hockenson this past week, but their linebacker core is probably the best part of their defense, that and their front seven altogether. And that's going to be the guys who are going to be doing the most battle at the tight end for Chicago. So I don't love him in this game.
So we don't have a match, even if you probably rattled off two or three other guys. The guy I'm staying away from at tight end this week is Tyler Higbee. I just don't like this Rams offense going against that San Francisco defense. It's hard to say, well, what did San Francisco do against Pat Freiermuth? Because he went out with an injury, right? So, I mean, you don't really get to gauge it there. I just think that they're going to – Matthew Stafford's going to be running for his life that game. And I just – maybe that bodes well for Higbee. But in my money, I'd rather stay away from Higbee and push it to Waller or possibly – and I don't really love all the value plays, quite honestly. So tell us, who's the value play?
You're absolutely right. The value plays are kind of a hodgepodge of who do you trust least.
Yes.
I guess you could maybe take a shot on Gerald Everett. If Kelce doesn't play, you could take a chance on either Bell or Gray again. But I'm going to go. There was one value play that stood out to me as someone that I feel like we might have matched on because it was just a glaring omission in terms of his price. And the reason being is we don't have a ton of data points to work with for him yet because this will be his second game in the pros. And that is Sam Laporta at home versus Seattle. Laporta really opened my eyes with his play last week. I truly wish I had more shares of him from a dynasty standpoint because he looked legit. Now, Seattle allowed the most yards to the tight end position last season. And they started this season by allowing the second most yards to the position. So, obviously, they did not improve that part of their secondary over the offseason.
So
Laporta should feast alongside Amon-Ra St. Brown. Make that your triple stack. Goff, Brown, Laporta, be happy, cash.
I can't argue against it. I got to be honest with you. I looked further down the list. I think that Laporta was damaged by being directly above Greg Dulcich. knowing I can't use Greg Dulcich because he's injured. And it just – it pushed me down the list, pushed me down the list. I'm like going, no. Oh, my God, no. No, 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 no. Huh. So I went really, really cheap. I went with a guy. He's on the road. They're playing a good defense. Maybe that'll play in his favor. He saw a lot of looks, got a lot of targets. Didn't do too badly. Maybe that's because one of the main wide receivers was slightly injured this week. That's going to play into it too. I don't love it, but he did lead the team in targets, and that's Logan Thomas against Denver.
Interesting. I think the attacking Denver in the middle of the secondary is probably better than trying to attack it to the outside. So I can understand the reasoning there.
That is correct. So we have a push. We did not go over. We did not go under. We hit the push. Vegas wins like always.
If you want a sneaky play, maybe a guy that was a lot of pomp and circumstance about earlier in the offseason, he's got an interesting matchup this week at home versus the Chargers. Consider Chigozie Okonkwo for Tennessee. Now, when you look at what Miami did to the Chargers last week, everyone's obviously going to look at the performance of Tua and Tyreek Hill.
Yeah.
But don't underserve the performance by Durham Smythe, a mediocre tight end by all standards, who had a very, very successful game, basically picking up scraps from Tyreek and Waddle.
Yeah. No, that's not a bad call, honestly. And you know what? You can get that and more when you subscribe to The Huddle and read what Harley has put up for DFS week after week at thehuddle.com. You can also reach out to him on Twitter, X, whatever, at Nuclear Harley. You can reach out to me at Steve Gallo NFL. And as I said, if you have not subscribed to The Huddle yet, do it. It's a one-year calendar. I'm sorry, 1 year from time of purchase. So you'll still get your preseason next year and stuff like that. And it's not like you're going to miss out and get in the short season or anything like that. And as we like to say, get blitzed responsibly. Cheers.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.